Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
What's up, Wing Wing Nation? This is Joe here. We are cooking up a national tour, but we need some info from you. So if you click the link below, there's a survey. We need to know which cities to go to. If you want us to go to your hometown, let us know in the survey below and we will consider it. It takes like 30 seconds and you get 10% off our online store if you complete it. And come see us live in person. We're going to have car meets. We're going to have contests. We're going to have sim racing. It's going to be so fun. So let us know where to go. Get 10% off merch and it's a win-win. And let's get into the show.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. This week we are talking about Hyundai and Kia and how they came to be. We get to learn a little bit about Korea. We get to learn a lot about Hyundai.
They started from bicycles. They went to working with Mitsubishi.
Infrastructure.
And Daewoo and Honda. And Honda, yeah. And then making roads.
And
making
Ford.
A bunch of stuff.
You learn about chaebols or rich families.
Samsung,
it's a lot. It's a lot. So we will start right now. It's the mid-1980s, and you're in the market for a new car. So, you start flipping through a floppy thing called a newspaper while sipping a refreshing tab, and you spot an ad. Hyundai XL. For the price of one car, you can have two. Sounds like a steal, right? And it was, for about 6 months, until both of your Hyundai XLs shit the bed. Fast forward to today, and Hyundai is one of the most respected and popular automakers in the world. How did an automotive giant form from the ruins of a low-tech, war-torn peninsula? When and why did it swallow its biggest local rival? And how did they combine to overcome joke reputations and achieve global success? Today on Pass Gas, we're diving into part one of a wild story behind Hyundai and Kia. Their origins, their struggles, their reinvention, and how they've become two of the most innovative car companies in the world. This is Pass Gas.
I know people pronounce it many different ways.
Yeah.
It's Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Rhymes with Sunday.
What did I say?
Hyundai.
You said Hyundai.
Hyundai.
So Hyundai rhymes with Sunday.
Hyundai.
So it's always Hyundai.
Hyundai rhymes with Sunday.
Yeah. Hyundai.
Okay.
That's good. It's good that we get it out of the way right away.
Yes.
Instead of halfway through the script.
Being like, oh,
you're not going to offend anybody, I'm sure.
I think.
It's one of those things that everybody kind of.
Hyundai.
You'll hear it both ways. Hyundai. But
well, what really messed things up, I think, was when Jeremy Clarkson on Top Gear would be like, Hyundai. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
And I think
how I normally hear you say it.
I know. Like, I still do it.
Yeah.
Hyundai.
Hyundai. It's the new Hyundai.
Yeah.
That was Paul McCartney doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had the song.
Yeah. You want to sing it?
Yeah. Hyundai, Hyundai, Hyundai. Love my little Hyundai. Hyundai, Hyundai, Hyundai. Rock and roll.
It was from Rubber Soul, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hyundai, bloody Hyundai.
That's you too. That's you too. That's pretty good there.
That's great. Welcome back to Pass Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined, as always, by Bart Bidlingmeyer.
Hello.
And
happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Joe Weber.
Hey, you know, sometimes really cool people shit the bed too. So... I think we should stop using that idiom, you know?
It is kind of like, it's pejorative.
Yeah, some people have loose buttholes, but they're still cool.
Who am I to judge? You know? And this
way
week,
to get political, Joe.
Wow, we're really coming up on episode 300. We're coming up on it.
Yeah.
This is episode 282, people.
282. Is there any significance with the number 282? Numerology.
I'm sure producer Danny could tell us.
Oh, is she a numerologist?
New York State Route 282.
Shouts
it's
out.
That's a road.
Shouts out to State Route 282 over there.
Yeah.
New York goes through Albany.
Here, I'm looking on the Wikipedia page for 282,
okay.
The number.
Okay.
282, 282, is the natural number following 281 and preceding 283.
Wow.
Yes. It's a composite number with three prime factors. It's also a palindromic number.
I do love palindromes.
Saying forward and backwards.
There's a band in Milwaukee when I was growing up called If I Had a Hi-Fi, which is also a palindrome.
That's kind of sick.
And every band member had a palindrome name, like Dr. Awkward.
Okay.
Or
okay.
Mr. Alarm.
Mr. Alarm. Okay.
Yeah.
Like that.
And they had some bops, dude.
If Shout I had Hi-Fi, that's a great local band name.
Right?
Yeah. And gimmick. I love that.
Yeah.
What kind of music did they play?
It was at the time where like punk was starting to use keyboards and like really basic sounding sine wave analog keyboards.
There was a band in LA called Fart Barf.
Yes.
That did like kind of the same thing, I think. Like on that similar kind of wave.
They played
around
at the Stink.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are we living?
Wore like the monkey masks and stuff, right?
I love that. Yeah. He was like, there was a band called Fart Barf. And Joe's like, yep. Absolutely. I know them.
Yeah. So this is a two-parter on Hyundai and Kia. What if you're like, actually, it's Kia? Yeah. Acknowledgement. We have worked with both brands in the past.
Yeah.
Full disclosure.
They kind of don't like us now.
Well, we did do a video on how to steal
a Hyundai.
Hyundai's.
Or Kia. We talked about the Kia boys.
And demonstrated how to do that.
It's very easy. Please do not do it.
Yeah. I'll just leave it at that. You do the math.
And you'll find out it adds up to 282.
So without further ado, Joe, you want to kick us off here?
Sure. The story of Hyundai and Kia begins in the 1940s in the wake of World War II. South Korea was a nation in recovery mode when both companies started in industries far removed from automobiles, but their efforts would lay the foundation for the country's eventual rise as an industrial powerhouse. Kia was founded in 1944 by Kim Cho-ho. The company was initially known as Kyungsung Precision Industry. At first, Kim focused on manufacturing small industrial products, but soon he made a pivotal contribution to the Korean people. Bicycles.
Hmm.
You guys heard of those?
I'm familiar.
You ever heard of these things? Bicycles?
Well, it's funny. Just that's like almost how every car company started.
Yeah.
Everybody was making bikes, and then they started making cars, and now it's been 50 years, and they were making bikes.
Yeah.
And then they start making cars.
In 1951, Kyungsung produced the Samchili, the first domestically made bicycle in Korea. During this period, material shortages were widespread. Resources like steel and rubber were scarce, so businesses had to rely on ingenuity to survive. Kim Cho-ho used surplus materials from the U.S. military, such as discarded oil drums and wire ropes, to craft his bikes.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. By then, the Korean War and subsequent partition into North Korea and South Korea brought further challenges to everyday Koreans. Daily life became grueling with limited access to basic necessities. In this context, bicycles like the Samchili were the first Korean vehicles to become essential tools and played a critical role in helping families and businesses navigate the difficulties of post-war life. We talk about this all the time. There's always like one vehicle that brought a country out of squalor following war.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to do like a kind of montage episode of all the vehicles that like post-war vehicles. Let us know in the comments if you want to hear that episode. In 1952, Kyungsung Precision Industry was rebranded as Kia Industries. The name Kia reflected the company's ambitious vision. Derived from Sino-Korean characters, Ki means to arise and A represents Asia. The name signifies Kia's aspiration to make a mark on the world.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Hyundai's origins are equally tied to the story of South Korea's recovery and development. It was founded in 1947 by Chung Jung-yung, a visionary entrepreneur who initially focused on infrastructure projects. The name Hyundai, which translates to modern times, embodied Chung's forward-thinking approach
and his desire to drive progress in a rapidly changing world.
Love that name too.
The liberation of Korea from Japanese occupation in 1945 set the stage for Hyundai's early success. As South Korea sought to rebuild its economy, the government awarded Hyundai several construction contracts. These projects allowed it to play a crucial role in developing the country's transportation infrastructure, including roads, bridges, and ports.
Sounds like a lot of moolah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not
that
cheap.
Is the South Korean dollar.
Yeah, South Korea, they use the moolah.
The moolah.
Many of Hyundai's most significant infrastructure contributions came during the 60s and 70s, a period of rapid industrialization often referred to as the miracle on the Han River. This term describes South Korea's transformation from a war-torn nation into a thriving industrial economy. The Han River is symbolic, representing the area around Seoul where much of this economic growth took place.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it's unique. Korea's story of rebuilding is unique in that the American government was very invested as well in rebuilding the country and having a foothold on the continent. It's a very, it's a place where, at least from what I've seen, unbridled capitalism over there. Mm-hmm. And that also has led to the creation of a lot of Korean tech companies that we really enjoy, really love and use their products. But also Seoul is like an incredibly complex and technological city.
Great skyline.
Really cool skyline. Yeah.
It's a huge city.
Chung's leadership was instrumental in the transformation. Under his direction, Hyundai took on ambitious projects like the Gyeongbu Expressway, which connected the cities of Seoul and Busan. Hyundai also contributed to the development of industrial complexes, power plants, and shipyards, which became the backbone of South Korea's export-driven economy.
Just don't take that train to Busan.
Yeah, I've heard it's pretty rough.
There's an idea, nice. I think in America we come from, a lot of the companies are like, oh, I do this. Like we're a tractor company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're an automotive company. And I think in Asia you see a lot more of the, we can do that.
Yeah.
Diversification. You
know,
everything.
Yeah.
Like Mahindra in India, they do everything. You know, and here Kia came from, or Hyundai came from. Building infrastructure.
Yeah.
And so then, we could build a car to use it.
Some stuff that can use the infrastructure.
Yeah. I'd love they're just sitting there for like 30 years. And then finally somebody's like, oh, we can build a car.
Yeah.
We got all these roads.
I just thought of something, guys. Yeah. What if you had a little thing who could drive on the road?
Drive? Yeah. I think it's a weird concept in America when. Like, you look at Yamaha, it's like pianos and motorbikes. Mm-hmm. It's like, why? How did that happen?
Yeah, that's good.
But it also happens in like Husqvarna in Sweden.
Yep.
It's like chainsaws and motorbikes.
Yep.
It's just very, like, it's natural that you would use the same infrastructure that you build these little engines to also build motorbikes.
I think what's probably like the most confusing thing is that, I mean, that's not like an uncommon phenomenon in the U.S. Like, we have companies like General Electric make appliances also bombs and whatever, but like car makers specifically in the U.S. don't really have that sort of structure.
Right.
Yeah.
Because maybe it's just so profitable to just go after cars all of your energy just on that. Especially in the U.S. I just like, maybe not everywhere else, but like we were so bought into the idea of cars as transportation. That is just so profitable.
Let me fact check the bomb thing real quick.
I don't know if General Electric makes bombs.
They used to make parts for nuclear weapons.
They use the same dials from their toasters for the bombs.
Okay, they make engines mostly for military aircraft. They have a specific thing. Hold on. I have to read this. We do not manufacture, assemble, sell, or service cluster bombs, landmines, or nuclear weapons, or component parts of cluster bombs.
When am I going to get my cluster bombs fixed? Nuclear weapons.
And that's of February 2020. So, I'm sorry, GE.
But they're very specific about cluster bombs, which makes me think that they make other kind of bombs.
Well, I think cluster munitions are subject to like different Geneva Code regulations or something like that.
Yeah, cluster bomb is like a... I only know it from Worms.
I only know it because it's...
I love Worms.
Yeah. Dude, Worms is so good. Worms Armageddon.
Guys, let's go play Worms after
this. Yeah, f*** it. Cut the cameras.
Chung's personal philosophy played a key role in Hyundai's success. His motto, have you tried?
What a condescending.
He's not saying like, did you even try?
Okay.
It's like, it's more like, have you tried?
Have you tried Kalamari?
Here.
If my boss is like, you tried? You're like, I'm trying pretty fucking hard right now.
Is that have you tried?
You're
crushing this Korean, Bart.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all right. Have you tried? Yeah, trying my patience, Nolan. So his motto, have you tried, emphasized the internal importance of problem solving, persistence, and innovation. Hyundai's success also demonstrated the power of South Korean chaebols, large family-owned conglomerates like Samsung and LG, to drive national economic growth. These conglomerates, including Hyundai and Kia, were central to South Korea's rise as a manufacturing hub. But the two companies' early successes would soon be overshadowed when cars finally came to Korea.
Mm.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
In the late 50s, South Korea was finally moving beyond decades of war and occupation and seeing the benefits of international aid. Among the first industries to take shape in the country's rebuilt economy was the manufacture of motorcycles and three-wheeled pickups, small but significant steps toward a motorized future for the country. Kia was one of the first South Korean companies to venture into motorization. In 1957, they began producing small motorcycles under a license from Honda. These vehicles were simple, affordable, and reliable, perfect for a country still finding its footing. This move into motorcycles allowed Kia to gain valuable experience in manufacturing motorized vehicles, setting the stage for more ambitious projects. By 62, Kia had expanded its capabilities to include small trucks. Working with Mazda, they produced the T600, which is not a Terminator, but a three-wheeled pickup truck that quickly became the staple of South Korean roads. Known locally as Sambari, or three-footed vehicle, these trucks were unassuming but became a common sight in rural areas and cities alike. They have such an enduring legacy that in 2008, the Korean government officially recognized them as a registered cultural asset.
Huh.
While Kia was cutting its teeth on motorcycles and three-wheeled trucks, Hyundai was making its first moves into the automotive industry. In 67, Hyundai Motor Company was founded as a spin-off from the construction company. The likes of Mitsubishi, also Mitsubishi. By this point, Hyundai Engineering and Construction was already a leading name in infrastructure, so expanding into automobiles was a natural step. Hyundai's first foray into making cars was a partnership with Ford.
Mm.
The two collaborated. Mm. Mr. Ford over here perked up.
I'm listening.
It was a 2008 Mustang. The two collaborated on a Korean version of the Ford Cortina, which began rolling off the assembly line in 1968. The plant that produced the Cortina was built in Ulsan, and its construction set a record for the fastest time from groundbreaking to full-scale production for any Ford assembly plant worldwide.
Oh, I'm sure there weren't any corners cut.
Literally, the building had no corners. Yeah, it was a big circle. Silo. The Cortina sold decently in South Korea.
I just don't like when people like, this is the fastest it's ever been built. If like LA built a bridge that was like, no one's built a bridge as fast as us. I'd be like, I'm not going on that.
Yeah, that's a fair
out
point.
Of principle.
Yeah. I mean, a factory is different, though.
Like, I'm not working in that factory.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The Cortina sold decently in South Korea, but Hyundai had bigger ambitions. They wanted to make their own car. To achieve this, they hired George Turnbull, an automotive executive from British Leyland. Turnbull brought a team of five trusted engineers with him from the UK. Together, this group began laying the groundwork for what would become Hyundai's first independently developed car.
Around the same time, Kia was taking its first steps into passenger car production. Partnering with Mazda once again, Kia launched the Brisa in 1974. Built on the platform of the Mazda Familia sedan, the Brisa was a compact and practical vehicle that marked a turning point for the Korean automotive industry. While it wasn't a ground-up design, 90% of the Brisa's components were manufactured in Korea, making it a significant milestone in the country's journey towards self-reliance in car production.
The other 10% was cut off.
The Brisa wasn't flashy, but it was precisely what South Koreans needed at the time. It featured a modest 1,000 cubic centimeter engine that produced about 60 horsepower and came with a 4-speed manual transmission.
That's not too bad.
Oh,
yeah. 60 horsepower from 1,000 cc.
That's all I need. I can use all 60 of those horsepower.
Yeah, dude, you ring that power out. Feels like 1,000 horsepower.
It was reliable, fuel efficient, and, most importantly, affordable. Qualities that made it an instant hit, especially during the fuel crisis of the 1970s. The Brisa was particularly popular among taxi drivers who appreciated its durability. It even became something of a cultural icon, thanks to its association with Korean political protests in the 1970s, where taxis played a critical role in mobilizing demonstrators.
Oh, that's tight.
Very cool. However, while Kia was finding success with the Brisa, Hyundai was working on an even more ambitious project called the Pony, Korea's first domestically designed car, which was unveiled at the Turin Motor Show in October of 1974. Hyundai, hey, Hyundai, it's hard to break. It's a hard habit to break, really, guys. Hyundai worked with some of the best minds in the automotive world to bring the Pony to life. Giorgetto Giugiaro, an Italian designer famous for his wedge cars and his wedge shoes that he wore.
Kia in 2023 did a pony coupe concept.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
The 74.
The Heritage. Yeah.
Wait.
Is that
the Vision 74? Vision
74.
Yeah.
That was a pony?
It's patterned after. Yes. Patterned after the Kia Pony.
Hyundai partnered with Japan's Mitsubishi Motors for powertrain technology, ensuring that the Pony would be as reliable as it was stylish. The Pony debuted as a four-door sedan in late 1975, but Hyundai quickly expanded the lineup to include a pickup truck, a wagon, and a three-door hatchback. The car came with a choice of two engines, a 1.2-liter four-cylinder or a 1.4-liter four-cylinder. With a top speed of 92 miles per and a 0-60 time of 15.3 seconds, it wasn't exactly a powerhouse, but it was affordable.
You think you could practical. Beat it in a foot race,
Nolan? Nah, I can't really beat anybody in a foot race these days.
Takes me 20 seconds to get up to 60 miles per hour.
Still
on
respectable.
Foot.
Yeah. That's probably about as fast as a pony.
About. Yeah.
60 miles per hour?
Oh, you better believe you see some of the ponies I rode, buddy. Yeah. You'd know.
Joe, we can go down the horse track. I'll show you exactly what ponies the bet
on.
I'm
pretty sure a horse can only go like 45. A full horse.
Yeah, but we go in there, we go into the stable, we give them the juice.
Soup them up.
The cocktail.
Soup them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we soup them up.
Amphetamines. Barbiturates.
A lot of Excedrin.
44.
Excedrin.
Excedrin is caffeinated, right?
That's the fastest recorded speed for a horse.
44?
Yep. I thought it was 45, but it is 44, it says, is the fastest recorded. Penn National Race Course, 2008.
Fastest recorded. I go to the underground horse races where they have like illegal mods to the horse.
Yeah. The Excedrin.
Yeah, the Excedrin horses, and they're real fast. They're a lot faster than those bitch-ass horses. Anyway, the Pony was a huge success, not just in Korea, but also in export markets like Ecuador and the Benelux countries of Northern Europe.
That's Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg, those countries.
Benelux. Luxembourg, huh? In fact, the Pony was so successful that the Korean government quickly decided it was the only car that Korea should make.
That's crazy. Can you imagine a government being like, sorry, guys, just Mustangs.
Just that.
Just 2008 Mustangs.
Hell yeah, brother. After a military coup in 1981, newly installed dictator Chun Doo-hwan introduced the Automobile Industry Rationalization Policy. Chun wanted to streamline the country's fledgling automotive sector and ordered Kia to cease production of passenger cars. Hyundai was designated as the sole Korean producer of passenger cars, while Daewoo was chosen for medium and large vehicles, and Kia was ordered to focus exclusively on light commercial vehicles like small trucks and vans.
I can't think of one Daewoo car that is not a tiny little car.
My football coach...
really drove a Daewoo?
A Daewoo, a little Daewoo hatchback. Yeah.
That's cool.
There was one of the Giorgetto Giugiaro also designed one of the Daewoos.
The 1980s marked a period of rapid growth and bold moves for Hyundai, both at home and abroad. Hyundai began exporting the Pony in 1976, just 1 year after its debut, and this was the beginning of the company's global journey.
I also export ponies, but don't tell my accountant.
Why?
He's the one who's hiding the money, Joe.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
He can help you hide that horse money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You buy a car wash with that horse money, launder that horse money.
Right. Let's take five.
By 1982, Hyundai entered the British market, making the Pony the first Korean car to be sold in the UK. This was a significant milestone, as Britain was an established and very competitive market. The Pony was also later exported to Canada, where it quickly rose to become the top-selling vehicle. No way, that's crazy. However, stringent emission standards kept it from ever coming to the United States. In 1985, Hyundai reached a major production milestone. Their 1 millionth vehicle rolled off the assembly line. But Hyundai wasn't content to stop there. What if they were just like, all right.
We did it.
We did it.
Yeah. Closed shop. And it was the quickest plant shutdown in history.
Yeah.
That reminds me of that Bradley Cooper chef movie from like 2013 called Burnt.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really bad movie. It starts, so he worked at like a Michelin star restaurant.
Okay.
And something happened. I didn't finish the movie, so I didn't figure out what happened.
The freaking head chef gets in his face and he tells him what for.
Yeah. Basically, so he leaves like the Michelin like fine dining scene to go like shuck oysters in New Orleans.
Okay.
And it starts with him shucking an oyster and crossing off another like a hash mark.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the millionth oyster that he shucked. And that was his like tithing for whatever sin happened in the fine dining world. He had he made himself shuck a million oysters. But I always think that's the dumbest. No one would ever do that shit. And then he's like very, he just, his like caricature of a chef is so annoying.
Sorry to hear that, Joe. Sorry you had to go through that.
I can't watch any chef stuff now because it's either so far off reality or too close to home.
Mm,
I can't watch The Bear because it's too stressful.
I had anxiety dreams after
The
Bear.
POS system sound. I hear it in my dreams.
I think you also worked in a restaurant.
Yeah, I don't think they do this anymore. But like Bob Evans, like a bunch of different restaurant chains used to use that same. And then it got to the point, it's very close to those old like radio alarms.
So
they both suck.
Yeah.
And when you put them together, anyways, I used to have
ultra
like,
PTSD.
Oh my God, I can't. Yes.
Yeah. So they built a million cars. And after that, they were like, all right, we're going to set our sights on the world's largest and most lucrative car market, America, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Hyundai finally made its entrance to the U.S. market in 1986 with the Excel. Based on the second generation Mitsubishi Mirage, the Excel used mostly Mitsubishi hardware, but was assembled in Hyundai's Ulsan plant. It was a compact, no-frills commuter vehicle powered by a 1.5-liter four-cylinder engine that produced a modest 68 horsepower. Though turning on the air conditioning noticeably sapped its already limited power.
I can't remember his name. There is a very funny kind of, I don't want to call him blue-collar comic because that's its own thing now. But he's just the kind of working-class dude, but he would talk about how crappy his car is. And he'd be like, I turn the radio on and it slows down. That doesn't even make sense.
Well, seems like a Mitch Hedberg kind of guy.
He's similar vibe.
Yeah,
he's like
Wright.
No,
oh,
but I know Stephen.
While the Excel's performance wasn't anything to write home about, the feature that stood out was
price. It doesn't make a lot of power. We're talking as well as what the joke was.
The feature that stood out was the price. At just $4,995, or about $14,000 in today's money, it was one of the most affordable new cars on the market. Average new car at the time cost $12,500.
And just reference, the Yugo was $3,990. So it's like $1,000 less than the Excel.
I believe that.
The Excel costs the equivalent in today's money of $14,000.
Yeah.
Would you buy a new car for $14,000 today?
Well, I'm pretty sure that the Nissan Versa Note is the cheapest thing that you can buy, or it's the Mitsubishi Mirage or MIE or something like that. I wouldn't drive a Versa Note. That thing would crush like a can, dude.
I've actually been not taking this serious, but I have been like, man, it would be nice to have a little small, cheap little commuter car that I can just go to the work, tool around in. Because my truck is, I mean, it's not a big truck by any means, but it is starting to get a little annoying.
I'm not hating on people who drive Versa Notes. Like, if that's all you can afford, then it's a good car. I just, like, if you were behind me and I was driving a Versa Note and you were in your Ram, I would feel, I would be shitting bricks.
Yeah.
Because you drive like an asshole.
I do. I do. Actually, no, I don't.
What? You know what?
I don't know.
The rear washer thing on my A3, the little cap that redirects the flow of the fluid to spray on the window, popped off. So it just sprays right behind me. And I've been waiting for someone to like tailgate me to the point where it's like, I can just spray them.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
So you would get a cheap car because when the things break, it's hilarious.
Audrey just told us that Mitsubishi Mirage is $16,000 roughly.
Jeez. Yeah.
So I would say that's about the cheapest thing you can buy.
Mm-hmm. Hyundai's pricing strategy was so compelling that the Excel earned a spot on Fortune Magazine's Best Products of 1986 list. Hyundai sold a staggering 126,000 cars in their first year in America, setting a record for the fastest selling imported car in U.S. history, I assume at the time, all despite having dealerships only in 31 states.
That is pretty nuts.
That's gnarly.
And it's...
That's gnarly, dude.
I bet I would have bought one.
Yeah?
I think
you were alive then. Why didn't you?
That's pretty good. I was working on it. I was 10.
Oh.
So... Yeah. I was trying to scrap together my paper money from my paper route.
In 1987, Hyundai adopted the slogan, cars that make sense, and shattered its own record, selling 264,000 Excels in the car's second year.
Damn.
Wow.
One ad.
And for Hyundai, they were cars that made sense because of money.
Because of money. If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense.
Making that moolah. One ad proclaimed, for the average price of a new car, you can get a Hyundai Excel and a spare. However, in Hyundai's haste to meet skyrocketing demand, the company made two critical missteps. Here we go. First, the Excel wasn't a great car, to say the least. Rust was a major problem, with many cars developing significant corrosion within just a few years. Plus, because the Excel was so cheap, many of its customers didn't bother with routine maintenance, further compounding frequent mechanical issues.
That's pretty fun.
That is fun.
Just get another one.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
The second problem? Hyundai was selling the car to pretty much anyone. Credit checks be damned. This combination of factors meant that Hyundai was forced to repossess lots of Excels, most of which were already worth less than the remaining debt on their loans, which created enormous financial headaches.
I wonder what the market is on 86 Excels right now, if you can still find
one. If you can even find one, I don't know.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like they're lasting, huh?
By the late 1980s, the Excel was no longer selling well, and Hyundai needed something new if they wanted to regain their momentum in the United States market. So in 1989, they introduced the Sonata, a larger and more refined sedan, again, based on Mitsubishi underpinnings. The first Sonata to reach the U.S. was actually the second-gen model, known internally as the Y2. This version, styled by the same firm behind the Excel, shared a family resemblance but was larger in every dimension. Lacking the Excel's aggressive pricing advantage while retaining its stigma, the Sonata did not sell. Additionally, Hyundai's problems were compounded by losing $400 million on a factory in Quebec, which they built to manufacture the Sonatas that weren't selling. The plant closed just a few years after opening.
That's just bad business.
That sucks, dude.
Well, they took a gamble, right?
Took a gamble. Yeah.
Didn't pay off at the time.
I mean, they had the foothold with the pony in Canada.
Yeah, they did.
It seems like natural that they'd want to, you know, that Volvo did that.
Yeah.
They built in Nova Scotia.
Nova Scotia.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
As Hyundai grappled with quality issues, Kia made its own move into the American market. By the mid-80s, the South Korean government had relaxed its restrictions on Kia, allowing them to resume passenger car production. In 1986, Kia introduced the Pride, a compact car developed in collaboration with Ford and Mazda and sold domestically. In 1992, Kia established Kia Motors America, KMA, setting up operations in Irvine, California. The first Kia sold in the U.S. was the Sophia, a compact sedan introduced in 1994. Kia took a strategic approach, initially focusing on the West Coast before gradually expanding nationwide. In 1995, the company launched the Sportage, one of the first small SUVs in the U.S. The Sportage arrived ahead of its competitors like the Toyota RAV4 and contributed to Kia's quick growth. By the mid-90s, Kia had over 100 dealerships across 30 states and was selling a record 24,740 vehicles annually. So like a fraction of what Hyundai was selling. However, Kia's momentum was short-lived. The 1997 Asian financial crisis devastated South Korea's economy, which had become heavily reliant on short-term foreign loans to fuel rapid industrial growth. Many companies, including Kia, had borrowed extensively in U.S. dollars while generating revenue in local currency. When South Korean currency lost significant value during the crisis, these debts suddenly multiplied. The financial turmoil began in Thailand, but quickly spread across Asia, hitting South Korea, Indonesia, and Malaysia particularly hard. South Korea faced soaring debts, plummeting foreign reserves, and a sharp decline in currency value. All three major automotive chaebols, Hyundai, Kia, and Daewoo, were deeply affected, with Kia declaring bankruptcy in 1997.
Oh.
The collapse was a blow to national pride, as Kia had become a symbol of South Korea's industrial success. The South Korean government stepped in to stabilize the economy, facilitating Kia's restructuring to prevent further economic fallout. During the bidding process for Kia, both Ford and Daewoo expressed interest, but Hyundai ultimately acquired a controlling stake.
Okay, because I was always interested about how this happened, because,
yeah,
you know, I guess I could have just looked into it.
You can always do that.
I can always do that. We have free will. But, okay, that is interesting and makes a lot more sense now. Okay.
I didn't realize they were connected till maybe like 4 years ago.
Right, same. Yeah.
Ford opted not to invest in Kia due to concerns over the company's financial instability, while Daewoo was grappling with its own challenges that eventually led to bankruptcy a few years later.
There was a lot of drinking. Daewoo was just out partying, hitting the bars, not taking care of its responsibilities.
Yeah, just like not wearing sunscreen.
Not wearing sunscreen. Not exercising. Just not being a very communicative partner. We knew Hoktua coin was gonna be a rug pull from the beginning, but they went all in on that.
Yeah,
lost their ass.
I don't know. I have done so many of those schemes; they all just blend together. So
yeah, you've got that pink Cadillac, don't you? The Mary Kay Cadillac.
Well, the Y fell off just as Mary Kay. Doesn't even make any sense.
Oh, gotta get that fixed, but
good. I have yet to unload most of that makeup.
Yeah. Oh, so you've been buying it? Because I was wondering, you have to sell a lot of Mary Kay to get that pink Corvette.
Yeah.
But if you're the one buying it.
Are you guys interested?
No.
Ah, how about your significant others? Doesn't makeup doesn't? I know technically it's expired. But come on, makeup doesn't expire.
But you also got weird
just smells a bit.
Colors too, like blue and green.
It was I went all in because it was a time in the 80s when you had
from the 80s.
Yeah,
so it's definitely expired.
I'm just riddled with debt since I was 10.
It's also an 80s Corvette.
It's a C4 Corvette.
No, it's a Cadillac. You guys know anything about Mary Kate, you get a pink Cadillac.
A Cimarron. A pink Cimarron. Yeah.
No, it's the caddy that zigs. It's
Katera?
What was that one? Yeah, it's a Cadillac Katera.
Yeah.
That was the one that zigs. Remember they had that ad? It was like a duck.
Oh, yeah.
They had a little duck selling Cadillacs because who wouldn't buy a car from a duck?
Well, you know, that's what CTS stands for. Katera Touring Sedan.
The ducks. Oh, there's ducks in the logo. I didn't even know that.
There's ducks in the Cadillac
logo? Yeah. The ducks in the Cadillac logo. What? So there's I just thought they were like little hashtaggy check marks. No, yeah. They're merlets, mythical birds that symbolize striving for excellence. And then they took them out
over time. But
holy shit.
Yeah. Look at that.
What?
Yeah. And then in the 1997 Katara, that's when
the ducks made a comeback.
Well, they used the duck, a cartoon duck, in the commercials to sell the Cadillacs.
The Cadillac logo is goated.
It's goated.
Sure.
Yeah. It looks like a general's uniform.
Yeah. Bring back the ducks.
Sure.
Bring them back.
Hey, Cadillac, if you're listening, bring back the ducks. People love them. People love the ducks.
I didn't know that you had ducks until 45 seconds ago. Bring them back.
Yeah. XT5, what the hell is that? Bring a duck. Cadillac duck. Mallard. That's a cool duck. By the end of the restructuring, Hyundai and Kia entered into a partnership in which each company acquired a piece of the other, kind of like Harry and Voldemort, making the process slightly different than a merger. However, the end result was a bunch of horcruxes, which they had to destroy.
Okay.
The end result was that Hyundai emerged as Kia's largest shareholder, which resulted in Kia becoming Hyundai's subsidiary. This partnership marked the start of a new chapter for both companies, allowing them to pool resources while maintaining separate wands. One of them had a unicorn hair in it, and the other one couldn't use the wand.
The way we're talking split about down magic the middle. Wands is what he's doing now, Nolan.
Hyundai and Kia's journey through the late 20th century was one of rapid growth, bold ambitions, and hard-earned lessons. Each company overcame immense challenges to merely continue existing. But the story doesn't end there.
Mm.
Next time, in part two, we'll explore how Hyundai reinvented itself to become a global automotive powerhouse and how its partnership with Kia helped it shape the modern car industry.
It's pretty cool that having been a subsidiary of Hyundai, Kia has still very much made its own way as a car company.
And,
you know, it's not like those are the same. They each have their own identities.
Sure.
And they're each doing very cool things right now.
I think a good example of that is the EV6 and what's the Hyundai version of that?
The Ioniq 5.
Ioniq 5, both completely styled differently.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the same car, but they're, you can get like a, 500 horsepower version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I see one on the road with like the matte metallic, I'm like, damn, that's a kind of like sick car.
And I think, again, both Kia and Hyundai, and also to the extent then the luxury spinoffs, are doing some amazing design things with wheels, especially. Yeah.
Genesis has some sick wheels.
Yeah.
But that thing wouldn't happen, I think, without a respect for the company you now own. You know, like I think with Ford, Lincoln, Mercury, there's a period where it's like, yeah, well, they're all the same car.
Yeah.
And I think that could have easily happened. And I'm glad that it didn't, the Kia under Hyundai.
Yeah. Huh. That's well a good said, thought. Bart.
Well said.
But we're going to get into that next time.
Yeah. Okay. In the meantime, we got some listener mail. This one's from Brandon Russell over in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And we did cut this down a little bit. Hey, guys, I've been listening and watching your videos since the days of Up to Speed and Science Garage.
Yep.
This is going to be a long one. I don't expect you guys to read it on the pod. Thank you, because we wouldn't. But I want to let you know about the impact you guys have had on me.
And we did read, just so you know, we did read it.
Full. Yeah. I am currently not reading the whole thing, just to be clear. I grew up watching and rewatching every episode of Top Gear UK with Jamie, Richard, and James, and also Hot Rod Garage on the Velocity Channel. This really sparked my interest in cars, which turned into a hobby and business venture with my buddies in high school, where we bought broken Mustangs, and fixed them and flipped them for some extra cash.
Sure.
Eventually, I bought my own Mustang, an 01 GT, nice, and began the now 10-year project of restoring and modifying it.
Dang.
In 2017, I stumbled across an Up to Speed video on Facebook and became obsessed with your content. I was constantly talking about the cars and things you guys are doing, and my wife suggested I either get a job with you guys or something to do with cars, so I can talk to people that share the same interests as
me. Stop bugging me.
I love it. You either get a job with Donut or shut up.
I got a job with O'Reilly and worked my way up to district manager in 2023, and this year I finally got to check off my bucket list item of meeting Nolan and Steph at the 2025 Leadership Conference in Houston, which was awesome. Thank you for everything you do, and keep it juiced!
Hell yeah.
Well, that's thank nice. You, Brandon.
Brandon from Fredericksburg. Do you remember meeting him?
I
just say yes. Just say yes. It was great. He was wonderful.
If he included a picture of his face, I probably would. But we met like 2,000 people that night. It was crazy.
Oh, okay.
It was a lot.
So everybody knows Nolan, unprompted after that trip, told me how great it was and how much fun he had.
It was.
How great everybody was.
It was a good trip. It was fun. Everybody was super nice. Yeah, it was a good time. I ate a...
what'd you eat?
The Valvoline booth that we were at.
You ate Valvoline?
It only had motor oil?
No. Yeah. So I ate just... They made little jelly beans out of oil.
They had ATF too.
Yeah. I was going to say I ate a bunch of jelly beans or whatever they had over there. Anyway. Thank you so much for your email, Brandon Russell of Fredericksburg, Virginia. If you'd like to hit us up, you can at passgas@donutmedia.com, and we might read your email on the air. We have another podcast, guys. I don't know if you know this. It's called The Big Three. It's a current event news show. We record it on Mondays, and it comes out on Wednesdays. Bart's on there. Joe's on there. I'm on there. And we occasionally have guests, and we have a lot of fun on that show. So go check out The Big Three for some more of our podcasts. It's a little bit more freeform than this one.
If you are a fan of Roadkill, you might like our next guest coming up in about a month's time. Whoa. So stay tuned.
Very cool. In the meantime, follow Bart at BidsBardo on Instagram. Follow Joe at Joe G. Weber on Instagram. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes on Instagram.
We're bringing a lot of masculine energy back to social media. Yeah. Per Zuckerberg's request.
That's right. Yeah. 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 He put out the word to all your favorite influencers. Hey, post more barbecue sauce related content. And smoking meats. We heeded the call, baby. I hope you're proud, Mark.
Mark. We call him Mark because we're so close.
Yeah. We're on a first name basis. All right, we will see you next time. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.